Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Stories now of murder, theft, fraud and treachery. The Underworld is a deep dive into the history of professional and organised crime in Britain. Its author is Duncan Campbell, who joins us now. Morning, Duncan.
Good morning to you.
And from a very wet Valencia, I think you join us this morning.
Yes, I know. It's appalling, isn't it?
How's lockdown going for you in Valencia?
Pretty well. I mean, everybody's... people seem to panic less here than they do in Britain. There's been no fighting for toilet paper in the aisles as there has been in Australia and Britain. People are pretty well behaved and pretty calm, and all the neighbours are very helpful and friendly to everybody, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. There's a definite juxtaposition between the two approaches, no doubt about it. So this book, what a fascinating thing this is, going all the way back to the racetrack gangs and the smash and grab merchants up to today. I was watching a really interesting documentary. I grew up in Glasgow and I worked for Radio Clyde for quite some time. And there was a documentary about Glasgow crime lords, basically, that was on the TV a couple of weeks back, and they were talking about people like Arthur Thompson, who was notorious in Glasgow amongst many, many others. And I know they're criminals, but there was almost a kind of local hero attitude towards these people.
Well, I think that's still true today. If you look at the fascination in, for instance, the Hatton Garden burglary, which was a bunch of elderly burglars, Easter 5 years ago, stealing around £15 million worth of stuff from safe deposit in Hatton Garden. I think there was a lot of sneaking admiration for them. Nobody was attacked. Nobody was stabbed or killed or anything like that. And I think that has remained the case from the days of Dick Turpin and Robin Hood through the gangs, even as you say, the gangs in Glasgow. There was a sort of sneaking admiration for them. I mean, the Glasgow gangs in the 1930s, the Razor gangs, were feared and respected, and a lot of them then went off and had fairly heroic wars as serving soldiers, so that they gained respect in that way. But I think there always has been a respect from one's school days onwards for people who break the rules a bit, provided they do it in ways that don't harm what you might call innocent people.
Yeah, that's interesting. One of the things that came out in that program I was watching was the whole kind of protection racket thing. I mean, has that gone away now?
No, there's still there's certainly still protection rackets existing in most main cities in Britain, but nothing like existed when the craze were at their height. The craze were looked down on by a lot of professional criminals, by a lot of robbers, because they didn't make the money themselves going out and carrying out a bank robbery or a theft or whatever. They made it from protection. People paid the craze and the Richardsons money so that their club, their shop, their business would not be disrupted. And that level of protection exists in an informal way today. You still have gangs. They're much, there's many more of them. There's, you know, depend on which member of the police you're talking to, but there's reckoned to be around five or six thousand gangs, professional gangs as such in Britain. And a lot of them have a form of protection, in that people will give a portion of the money they're making out of drugs to the people, so that they don't get into trouble in their particular areas.
And it seemed that in the past, the kind of family gangs would conduct their business in clubs and pubs, which I imagine has now changed, hasn't it?
Yes, that's changed a lot. I mean, so have the family gangs. I mean, the use of the craze, the Richardsons, the Arifs, the Whites, they used to be known like that. In a way, what's happened with the gangs is what's happened with business in Britain. It's become multinational. So you will now have people from a number of different countries or taking part. And the other thing that has changed is that in the old days, the Crays, the Richardsons and so on, they liked to be well known. They enjoyed, the Crays had their photos taken by David Bailey. You know, nowadays gangs don't want to be well known, you know, who, as David Bailey himself said, you know, that a smart gangster is a gangster that we've never heard of. And one of the former head of Europol, Rob Wainwright, said we've now entered a world of anonymized crime. Professional criminals don't want to have people writing about them and don't want to have the reputation that the Crays, Richardsons and so on had in the 60s.
And I guess there's a certain irony there because, of course, Crays, Richardsons, easy names to remember, easy names to pronounce, but rather like the British football fans have had to learn to pronounce the names of new foreign players, I reckon detectives have probably had to do the same for these new criminals.
Yes, I mean, this has been, I mean, traditionally there's always been a group of people who've come from outside the country. They're always blamed slightly out of proportion for the amount of crime that they bring in. But what you do have, there has been an influx of a number of Eastern European criminal gangs into Britain. The best known, I suppose, currently call themselves the Hellbanians out of East London. And they have profited because there's very few detectives who will speak their language, and they're able to operate normally for a few years without being infiltrated by an informer or an undercover detective. And that has been one of the other main changes, the internationalization of crime within Britain, and the anonymization of crime helped, of course, as you know, by the internet.
Well, exactly. I was going to come to that. Is there a kind of a slightly different approach that they have now, whereas in the old days they would play the kind of fast game, whereas now they're playing more the long, slow game?
Yes, they're more like businessmen. I mean, in a way, the underworld has become the overworld in many ways. I mean, quite a lot of the gangs run legitimate businesses on top of the illegitimate businesses, so that the money can be laundered through the clubs or the restaurants or the minicab firms or whatever, in a way that didn't operate in the past. Because what you now have is something called the Proceeds of Crime Act, which came in 15 years ago. And if you can't prove that you've got your money in a legitimate way, your money can be taken away from you and you can go to prison under the Proceeds of Crime Act.
Right.
So that's become a big worry to people who were quite casually buying their mansions and their sports cars and so on. They get a tap on the shoulder. Where did this come from, matey?
And the type of crime, I'm guessing, has changed. Now we're talking drug dealers, we're talking trafficking of women and children from Vietnam. These crimes surely are new crimes, are they?
They're very much new crimes. I mean, drugs has been with us for 100 years, but never to the extent that it is now. I mean, you're even in the weird situation now where you can actually make more money selling drugs to people in prison than people out of prison. People are actually smuggling drugs via drones into prison.
Amazing.
Because there's such a good market for it. So that has become this enormous business, to the extent that quite a few of the police officers and ex-police officers that I was talking to while researching the underworld would now favour certainly the legalization or the decriminalization of drugs, because it's associated with so much other criminal stuff, such as violence and protection and the various murders that we've seen, particularly in London over the last two or three years.
I saw an interesting comparison about cars and the internet, in that crime in the 20s and 30s was like the motor car, when they could suddenly escape at speed and take advantage of new markets. And the internet has done that now again, hasn't it?
Yes, I know. I mean, the internet now, thanks to the dark net, Rob Wainwright again from Europol said that, you know, that there's something in the region of 350,000 illegal items that you can now buy on the dark net, and it's very, very difficult to trace them, and what country is it originating from, and so on. That whole internet world of fraud and drug dealing, and a lot of people would now buy their drugs through the internet, has been one of the major changes. I mean, that, and as you say, the trafficking of women from West Africa and Eastern Europe particularly, and it's noticeable in Spain as well as in Britain, has been one of the biggest changes. And I think there were something like 13,000 prosecutions under the Slavery Act a couple of years ago. I mean, you've got a lot of people who will pay £10,000-£20,000 or their families, thinking that they're coming to a nice new job in Western Europe, and then they find that they're meant to work as a prostitute. And that's been one of the most shameful developments of professional crime, I think, in the last decade.
Southeast Asia was very much in the news when those poor Vietnamese people were found in the back of the truck in London. And I was quite shocked that there was such a trade in people from as far away as Vietnam. But I noticed in reading your book that Vietnamese people, young Vietnamese people, are brought into the UK by traffickers and forced to work in cannabis farms.
That's right. They use them as the gardeners. They're there to do the watering and so on. And most of them speak very little English. Yeah. Their parents, their family may have paid as much as £30,000, an amazing amount of money, which they then have to pay back. And it will take them 2 or 3 years to pay it back. During that time, they're locked in the little cannabis farm, as it were. When the police eventually track them down, as you can from the air, when you see that a lot of electricity is being used on what is otherwise a deserted property, it's those youngsters that get arrested, and rather than the people controlling them, and they then get sent back and deported. And there are good lawyers looking after them and defending them, but the innocent people are the victims of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to live in London, and I still kind of follow the London news. And knife attacks, of course, is a huge deal now. And that, I guess, has focused the attention on gangs, has it?
Very much. I mean, when I was researching the book 3 years ago, I spent a lot of time in the Old Bailey. There were five separate murder trials going on in adjoining courts. And they were all young men, nobody over the age of 22. None of the victims were over that age. They were almost all what we call now joint enterprise cases. So there would be two, three, up to six people in the dock for stabbing. And they were all pointless crimes. Somebody had been in somebody's area. Somebody had not shown respect. Somebody had not responded properly when asked which gang they were banging for. Somebody had stolen somebody's bike. And you looked at these young men, they were like schoolboys, and they had no idea that they would be ending up doing time for murder. And now the sentences are very heavy for murder. It's automatic life, but with a recommendation now, usually of a minimum of 22 years. And that the knife crime in London, I mean, just to put it in context, you're, as a teenager in London, you run a possibility of being stabbed. But in America, you're 16 times more likely as a teenager to be shot dead than you are in Britain to be stabbed. But it's still, you know, it's still a very disturbing crime, and it's a kind of pointless one. You do see, I would watch these young guys sometimes with their lips trembling, and they suddenly realized they'd gone along five-handed to a party, they'd been thrown out, so they stabbed somebody to death, and suddenly they're going to spend the equivalent of the life they'd had so far, the next 20 years in prison, in having a very boring life inside. And I think that's what a lot of young people who join gangs don't realize, that prison is actually very boring in the end. It may seem exciting and stylish from the outside, but it's a boring world inside.
There used to be a trend where people would head off to Spain, where we're both talking from now. But I get the impression that they're still coming to Spain, but also a lot further away, like places like Thailand and South Africa.
Yes, you're a bit safer in, I was talking to, in fact, to during the course of the book, to to Jason Coughlin, who an ex-criminal who gives advice, legal advice in Spain. And he was saying, you know, that smart people now would not, on the run, would not come to Spain. I mean, Spain became the Costa del Crime and fashionable in 1978 because the extradition treaty between Britain and Spain broke down. It only lasted for seven years. But during that time, a lot of people like Ronnie Knight and Freddie Foreman, professional criminals, came here and established a world here. It still exists. I mean, we still have a British drug dealer's body washed up on the coast of the Costa Blanca. I mean, these things are still happening. And if you look at the Crime Stoppers website, Operation Captura, you'll see they've had dozens of British criminals wanted in Spain, and the majority of them are identified and caught, and under the current extradition treaty, which the European extradition arrest warrant, they go back pretty promptly back to Britain. And talking again to Jason Coughlin, a lot of the people who are arrested in Spain, who are wanted, are identified not by members of the public spotting a particular tattoo, but by rival criminals who will tip the police off and get their rival drug dealer off their block, as it were.
Interesting. Let's finish with the Diamond Wheezers of Hatton Garden back in 2015. Were they the last of the kind of old guard who would be kind of held up as sticking it to the man in a kind of strange way?
Yes, they're an interesting crew. I mean, I knew Brian Reader, quite well from the old days, and I was amazed to see him again in court after all this time. But I think they had been looking at that particular possibility of a burglary there for a while, and I think they just thought they couldn't resist it. So it was a quiet weekend. It was Easter. It was Passover, and they thought, let's do it. And they didn't take any weapons along with them. They know that a commercial burglary in Britain, the maximum sentence is 10 years. It's not a robbery because you're not using violence, right, or the threat of violence. And I think they reckon they might just get away with it. And it resulted in three films and
yes,
a television series, which is on at the moment, and even a song. There's even a song about them.
How extraordinary. And what about lockdown now, as we find ourselves in? Has that made it easier or more difficult for crime to continue, do you think?
Well, the police in Britain say crime's gone down at the moment because there's nobody on the street and so on.
Yeah.
I mean, on the other hand, the government is telling you to go around dressed as a criminal, wear a mask and wear gloves. Don't leave any fingerprints anywhere. There has been some crime in terms of people trying to sell bogus coronavirus test kits.
Yeah.
There has been an increase in domestic violence because people are locked down. But I think I was talking to an old retired bank robber yesterday, and he said people talk about lockdown and how they're stir crazy after 2 weeks of being locked down, and he said they should try 13 years. And I think what lockdown may mean is that Britain jails more people than any other country in Western Europe. I think at the end of it, people may think, maybe we shouldn't be locking up quite so many people for quite such a long time. And they may think lockdown is pretty grim not to be allowed out to see your friends and family for a long period of time.
Interesting. Really, really fascinating chat. The book is called Underworld. Duncan Campbell, we really appreciate your time this morning. You take care of yourself up in Valencia.
And you. Okay, thanks very much.
All the best.
Nice.
Cheers.
Talking to you.
Bye-bye.